I guess we'll call the meeting to order. Good evening. Public hearing, yes. Good evening. First order of business tonight is a public hearing on the 2012 New York State Department of Housing and Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program. And I believe Ed Marks would like to speak first.
Just briefly, as you recall, several weeks ago there was a public hearing on the needs in the community. At that time, the only project presented was by Better Housing for Tompkins County for continuing the home ownership program, and that is the project that this hearing is with respect to, proposal to submit an application to continue the home ownership program for Tompkins County. I think there are at least one person. There's at least one person who wants to speak to that.
Okay. Thank you, Ed.
Hi. I would just
your name, please. Your name?
My name is Rosie Zipchak. I work with Better Housing for Tompkins County, and I would just like to add that the home ownership program creates a stronger community. There have been 328 closings for median income families to be able to purchase their first home, and there have been over $19 million leveraged with local lenders on behalf of this program. That's all I want to say. I think it speaks for itself.
Thank you very much, Rosie.
I do have some brochures if you'd like to pass them around.
Thank you very much, Rosie. Would anyone else like to speak as part of the public hearing? All right, thank you. I'll close the public hearing and open the May 1st, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance first.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Roll call of members. Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna? Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. And the first order of business is a proclamation. For Hot Dog Day in Tompkins County, I'd like to ask Mr. Lou Castanetti to come up to the front, please. Whereas the SPCA of Tompkins County was incorporated in 1902 in an effort to prosecute individual cases of cruelty to animals, and whereas in 1904 the organization acquired sheltering facilities and took over as poundmaster for some of the municipalities within the county and investigates individual cases of cruelty, as well as providing impound, sheltering, and adoption of unwanted dogs, cats, and other animals, and whereas in 1999 the SPCA Board of Directors resolved to become a no-kill shelter, a vision realized by the end of 2001. And whereas the Tompkins County SPCA takes in over 2,000 animals per year and has an annual live release rate of 93.06%. And whereas through fundraising and the generosity shown by the residents of Tompkins County, the Dorothy and Roy Park Pet Adoption Center opened in 2004. And whereas as a continued effort to ensure continuation of the work of the Tompkins County SPCA, Louis Lou Castanetti has continued to show his generosity by holding an annual Hot Dog Day fundraising and educational event and donates proceeds to the agency. And whereas two anonymous donors have stated all donations for this event will be doubled up to a total of $25,000, further showing the community's generous nature, now therefore I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 4th, 2012 as Hot Dog Day in Tompkins County, and extends appreciation to Mr. Castanetti and the citizens of Tompkins County for the support of the Tompkins County SPCA.
Thank you.
much, and everybody supports your local shelter, whether it's the local Tompkins County or any shelter, wherever you live. Thank you very much.
And I'm going to do a little bit of reordering of our agenda. And the first thing I would like to do is ask Legislator Jim Dennis to come to the front of the room. He can get here. Let me just say, this time next year, folks, we'll be in a nice, big, beautiful chambers, two doors down, where you'll all have plenty of room to sit.
Yeah, I was wondering that we were giving something away and no one had told me, but we aren't at this point, except I am. Last month, I don't even want to go back to last month. This month, starting in April, we have a Distinguished Youth Award to give out. And the person that I have chosen and was recommended to me by Carissa Mann Parlato and her lovely daughter Phoebe is Desiree Cochran. And Desiree is here this evening with her mom and dad, Ann and Rob, grandmother right here, grandfather, friends, aunts and uncles, I believe, and sister-in-law. No? Well, a good number of people from Trumansburg, and the best part of it so far was I'm out there talking to people, and someone looks at me and says, "And who are you?" and I wonder that myself sometimes. But at any rate, the award is sponsored by A&B Engraving, Purity Ice Cream, Cougar Radio, Bangs Ambulance, and, of course, the county legislature. And I'm so happy that that Desiree is here. And Desiree, if you want to say a few words, and then we will give you your well-deserved gift. Go ahead.
So I won this award based on my community service that I've been doing. And I've, the three main projects that I've done for community service is being involved in Big Friend, Little Friend, which is what I do with Carissa, teaching chemistry to little kids at the Science Center, like one or two Sundays a month. That's in a little skit that's called Chemstations. And I also taught five nutrition classes to second graders at Beverly J. Martin Elementary School in the previous month. So he wanted me to talk about why I volunteer. And I volunteer because I like working with kids, and that's what all my volunteer projects have been for, is to work with kids and to help learn. And as future plans, I am going to Finger Lakes Community College for nursing, and then I'm transferring after 2 years to the University of Rochester to get my bachelor's, and then hopefully going on to be a nurse practitioner if my plans don't change. But I'd like to thank Carissa for nominating me, and thank all the sponsors, and thank everyone that came with me tonight, because there's like 15 people.
We've all seen these, but here's your DYA award, and it has your name beautifully printed on there, and all the sponsors, and another bag of goodies that you have.
Oh,
yeah. Turn your word.
Videotaping.
Goodies! The action. And you have these wonderful things, and it's I'm sure you don't have any T-shirts, so there's one more.
Thank you.
Yeah, Carissa, did you want to say anything at all? Go ahead.
Desiree is an outstanding young woman. I'm glad that she got this award, and I'm confident she's going to go on to do great things.
Thank you all for doing this. We appreciate all of you coming down here this evening, even though it was delayed. But thanks again.
You're certainly welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but we don't have any chairs. And I just want to mention that we take nominations for the Distinguished Youth Award from anybody and everybody. All you have to do is send a note to Kathy Covert at the legislature office, and we'd love to have more names in the hopper to consider. Thank you. Tonight I'd like to request an executive session at the end of this meeting to talk about a personnel issue. And next is privilege of the floor from the public. We will be doing some other reordering of things so that the fewest number of people can wait the least amount of time tonight. So first, members of the public, we have people signed up. Please respect the three-minute time limit. Kathy Covert will help you with that. And the if when we get to the end of the folks who have signed up, if anybody else would like to speak, you can just step to the mic. First is Brandon Douglas, followed by Diana Ceja. Brandon Douglas? Might he be in the hall? Oh, okay. Going up to that mic over there. And just let us know where you live, please. Say your name and where you live, please.
My name is Brandon, and I live in Ithaca at 116 South Keegan Street. Above Pete's Bar, which also has a head shop underneath it, apparently. One of seven in Ithaca. So what is it like working for a minimum wage? I'm speaking currently out of fear. I'm afraid that I may not have a place to live in the near future. Today I want to feel safe. I want to have peace of mind that goes along with financial security. I'm getting tired of making choices between making rent as my housing costs increase, or do I want to eat, or do I want to have heat? The food bank does always have open doors, but I look at the food available as I pick up the food, and it's often beyond its sell-by date. As I begin to feel like a second-class citizen, I feel as if this will be my life. Each day will get worse unless it changes. The changes that need to occur start with me asking for help. I cannot demand change, but I can show the results of the decisions that are made that are beyond my control. I can tell you stories of how people like me are living. I can tell you the facts about my daily life, about people in my life and friends that I'm around. And it's hard for me to admit to you that I cry every night about the insecurities that I have of living. I can't afford to go to school on what I make to help me through life and have a better outcome on my life. I've lost three jobs in the past 5 months, most of which due to downsizing or businesses closing. Preparing these words and thinking about presenting this to you has been unnerving as searching for another job. It's to the point where humility has become humiliation and being humble has become an embarrassment. I cannot reinforce enough the need for higher wages for people and to introduce us with more jobs. Small businesses are shutting down left and right. People are losing their livelihood and moving to larger businesses where they cannot control anything. I wish I knew what would happen. I wish that when I was in high school we were taught I wish there was a model to prepare us for what basic living needs actually meant, teaching us how to file for unemployment, showing us what it was like to file forms for food stamps or how to file for Medicaid or how to obtain a housing voucher. Someone to explain to us the need for help would be greater than the ability to provide for it. From a young age, I wanted to learn how to make a difference. So I went to school. I took tests to prepare me for college, which ended up leaving me with a debt sentence. I'm speaking out against our current minimum wage and for a higher increase. I want to live with peace of mind and serenity, not stress or worry. I'm tired of waking up in the middle of the night, scared for the next day. I don't know anything, and that's probably my biggest insecurity. I feel as if this is a lot of what I'm saying is falling on deaf ears, and what I need to change won't actually change. The change won't occur. I do have the ability to speak my mind, even if I have a shaky voice. I can assert myself to you, knowing what I do need, and then feeling empowered by it. I keep trying to have faith in the next day, and faith that the system will work, but currently it's failing. It's currently failing me. It's currently failing my friends. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Diana Seja and then Carl Fitzke.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Diana Seja. I help out at the Worker Center. I'm part of the leadership team. I'm also an active community union organizer. And I can definitely relate to what Brandon has shared with us today. I went to school around here, Tompkins County Community College. I got my T-shirt. I also went to Cortland shortly afterwards and got my degree in political economics. Myself and my peers, as Brandon was saying, are having a difficult time in the job market. And unless decisions are made that will change the way that things are done, you know, it will continue to occur this way, especially with the youth that are graduating high school, to then join the workforce, if not already. And so what I plead to the people of the legislature is to honestly think about the decisions that you make in this room and behind closed doors, because, you know, not everyone is afforded the same opportunities as myself and was not able to go to school and to know that really how the system works and how politics and how the economy, how resources are distributed and how this is done. I have a sister that works in a minimum wage job. She has two children and so does her boyfriend. They work full time and they have a hard time making ends meet. They're responsible people. They are kind people. They are good parents. They are responsible citizens. They pay taxes, and yet they have a hard time making ends meet, and I fear for them. I fear for my family and what will happen to my nieces in the future, as I'm sure that, you know, not just myself, everyone else here does, anyone that knows here, that anyone that does not have a job that with benefits, that has security in it. And so I plead for you to, when you have to make decisions, to consider all of these, not just the numbers, but the personal testimony of people that are living under those circumstances of the minimum wage. I personally have three jobs, and and it's not in the field that I studied, but, you know, with a bachelor's degree, I can at least get a slightly better paying job than someone with no education and a minimum wage. So, I mean, is that right? This was not how it was intentionally, how it was intended to go. And I know that some people from previous generations were able to work beforehand and were able to afford cars and houses and work full time. You know, that's our history. What happened to that? You know, now we just have everyone struggling. You know, we have citizens that don't want to rely on government assistance. This is the truth. They don't want to. They have dignity. They want to work. And they want education. Education is getting more expensive all the time. So please consider these things when you make this decision, because you cannot change everything, but you can influence this right here. This, you know, you can support the resolutions. You can choose to change them. You can encourage business owners to become living wage employers, to provide their workers with benefits, because the money is out there and, you know, people are tired of working. So please help us out. This is a very progressive town, and you're all wonderful people. I've heard you speak. I've come to the budget committee meetings, and I think you're amazing. I think this town is amazing, and that wonderful things can happen here. So please allow them to and be part of that process, because we're leading the crusade. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana. Carl Fitzke, then Neil Uli.
Yes, hi. My name is Carl Fitzke. I live in the town of Ithaca on Rachel Carson Way. I'm a husband and father of two young men and electronic and audio engineer. I'm also a member of the local Ithaca Move to Amend affiliate. Many of our members are here tonight to speak. And I want to talk about the concepts of corporate personhood and artificial persons. Sorry if it sounds a little bit like a lecture, but I think it's helpful to have some background information if some folks aren't familiar with a lot of this stuff. Humans invented corporations in ancient times, so I understand things, and I think it made and continues to make sense to get some things done through private enterprise rather than government action. It's really a balance of the two that was kind of a genius of our country's founding. But the welfare of the public is really what ultimately should be served by our own inventions like corporations. So since back as far as the 16th century, I think we've granted corporations certain attributes that living, breathing people have as a convenience. They can enter contracts, for example, be parties to lawsuits, pay taxes. So in this sense, we consider them artificial persons. But that's not to be confused with corporate personhood, which is the issue at hand and what we hope to address in the country right now. Thanks to corporate personhood, corporations enjoy all human rights, and that's a concept which is clearly ludicrous. I didn't see any corporations here tonight pledging allegiance to our flag, many of them going multinational. It's kind of humorous, except for the fact that what some of the large companies have been doing with their powers, which clearly outshadow most individual living and breathing persons. I understand that others in Move to Amend and others speaking on this topic will use their time to maybe provide some more examples of the abuse that we're currently subject to. They're the very kinds of monopoly, in my mind, and corporate control of government that inspired the Boston Tea Party and the founding or the beginning of the American Revolution. So I'll just say corporations really should be tools for us. We should not, as the currently popular disparaging remark goes, be tools for them. What is corporate personhood in opposition to artificial persons? It really goes back to the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which was created to explicitly establish and protect rights of real human beings who had not enjoyed such rights to date because they were slaves. Unfortunately, the 14th Amendment in one part of Section 1 does not specifically refer to natural persons as it does earlier in that section. It just refers to persons. And that's kind of a loophole that a Supreme Court justice, without any discussion or political process involving we the people, this justice just declared in case notes to the case Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific Railroad that artificial persons should enjoy all the same rights as natural ones. And as I already said, this is documented in the case notes for that case. And there's a lot more interesting history about that. If you're interested, I suggest you look it up.
Finish up, Carl, please.
It's 3 minutes? Okay, I'm wrapping it up. Thanks. So this is just, I think, an appropriately led to a legal precedent, which I think is ridiculous. And I want to thank those who have worked on resolutions for the legislature so far. But I really want to encourage us to amend that to really end
you.
Corporate personhood and take money out of politics. Thank you.
Neil Uli, and then Amanda Manfredo.
Good evening. My name is Neil Uli. Victor called me a couple of days ago asking me if I could fill in for someone to do this tonight. I tried telling him I was too shy, but it didn't work. This is the copy of the Constitution of the United States. It looks like a pretty thick book, but it's really only the Constitution itself is only a few pages, plus a few pages of amendments. Fascinating document. Talks about rights. Talks about we, the people. We the people, okay? All of us here today. We have rights. We have rights because we're people. These rights are inalienable. We're human beings, born of mothers. Corporations are not human beings. They're artificial legal constructs. Legal constructs have been created around corporations to facilitate commerce and other interactions. These legal constructs give corporations privileges. Makes it easier for corporations to sign legal documents and contracts with other corporations and with people. Okay? Privileges, not rights. Okay? We've given them these privileges, and they've abused it. Okay? Now, I know this is hard to imagine if you live in the 17th century that someday corporations, foreign corporations, would have the right to influence our elections the way they do today. That's something that we have to think about, something that you guys are being asked to think about. Okay. But let's not forget that corporations, by their very nature, are in reality property, no different from your house or your car. Now corporations are claiming status equivalent to you, a human being. They're claiming rights under the Constitution. State of Florida, the legislature of the state of Florida, in order to control the growth of chain stores, attempted to tax them at a higher rate than small locally owned stores. The chain stores went to court and the law was struck down under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Because, as Carl said, they left out the concept of them being natural born humans in that statement. Okay. Another example is protection against search and seizure. We have the right to drink clean water, water that won't make us sick. But corporations are dumping all sorts of stuff into our waterways. I do not have the right to take a little bottle and go and test the effluent from a building to have it tested to see what's in it, because that building and the property are private property. I don't have the right. You don't have the right. Your agents, our Department of Health, doesn't have the right to do this without a warrant or without making an appointment. So if you make an appointment, what are they going to do? Well, any evidence will be gone by then. Okay. They're claiming that they have these rights under our Constitution. I'm asking you, as our representatives, Leslin, you as my representative, to say that we want a no-compromise amendment, one that says that corporations are not people and do not have the same inalienable rights as we the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Neil. Amanda Manfredo and then Victor Tiffany.
Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Manfredo from 1508 Danby Road in Danby. I'm going to talk to you about money as a form of speech. Everyone who lives in a place should have some say in how things are done, just as I'm doing now. The First Amendment was guaranteed to the citizenry of this country in a time of soapboxes and public squares, which are free, and times have changed. While it's become easier in some sense to have your voice heard on a national level through our technology, it is also prohibitively expensive for most to buy the TV time to do so. Candidates for public office do need financial help, but too much help from a limited number of sources begs the question of whom a candidate will serve once in office. In a 1971 attempt to address this, Congress passed the Federal Elections Campaign Act, or FECA, and this did several things. It put clear limits on how much any one person or committee could give to a party or a candidate. It limited how much such an entity could spend on politics in a year. It made it a rule that they have to keep track and disclose how much they spend on politics in a year, and it created the FEC, which is supposed to enforce those limits and rules. Then in 1976 came the U.S. Supreme Court decision of Buckley versus Vallejo. The court upheld the limits on dollars you can give to a candidate or party for them to spend, but it said that the limit on how much could be spent by outside entities such as corporations was a violation of our First Amendment rights because it's a limitation of free speech. Now, in one sense, they were right. To spend your money on politics or what you believe in can be construed as a form of speech, and it's something that I like to participate in myself a few times a year whenever I can afford it. But in another sense, they were dead wrong, because there are some things that a person just can't legally buy. He can't legally buy heroin or slaves or sex or the service of having his rivals murdered, and he can't buy government. The reason, obviously, is that some things that might be bought may be harmful to someone else. To equate money spent with constitutionally protected free speech gives us the result where a bunch of rich guys can purchase government that is amenable to their exclusive desires. And for that reason, the right to spend your money in the political realm must be regulated for the sake of maintaining government as a public institution. The interests of corporations and the super rich are not the interests of the general public. They want more profits at the sacrifice of a living wage, the sacrifice of worker safety, equal treatment in a court of law, all for more profits. Now, laws have already been passed that serve a desire for profits over human dignity, and we clearly see this in the privatization of our prison system, which is just one example where we've turned public funds into private gains. Prisons for profit spend millions of dollars a year lobbying for minimum mandatory sentences that put more people behind bars, often for nonviolent crimes. More prisoners means more profits. The effect of financial support on government officials needs to be minimized to the greatest extent possible. Democracy works on the principle that every voter has a voice of equal volume. When money is construed to be a form of public political speech, those with more of it have more say. That's no longer democracy, that's plutocracy. For these reasons, I implore you, my county legislature, to make a statement to the U.S. Congress saying that we the people will not stand for having our voices drowned under the deluge of corporate political money speech. Please amend Mr. Stein's resolution to include that money spent on politics by outside entities must be regulated. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. Victor Tiffany and then Lori Stage.
Victor Tiffany, I'm also would move to amend, and I live in Danby. I want to address this resolution that's actually before you tonight. It actually does not join the thousands of people it claims to. It is, in fact, misleading in that regard, and it's one reason it needs to be amended. This resolution is unique, and therefore presenting it to Congress as part of a movement would be confusing to congresspersons. It is self-contradictory. The whereas statements in the beginning of it, particularly the third one, actually points toward abolishing corporate personhood. And then in the resolve section, it ignores corporate personhood. It's self-contradictory. As Amanda pointed out, it doesn't go to the crux of Citizens United. That's what it was based on, is you can't control money because it's a form of speech. If you're going to overturn Citizens United, you have to end the doctrine that money is speech. So what it does do is basically get special interests out of politics, and that's a great thing. I've seen that mentioned in amendment proposals that we want Congress to pass, part of proposals that also overturn corporate personhood and the doctrine that money is speech. So as it stands, it's great. It just needs to be amended. You just need to add a little bit to it. You're not writing an amendment here. The language doesn't have to be precisely crafted. You're just advising Congress to amend the resolution, to amend the Constitution, to do certain things. Get special interests out of politics. Great idea. End corporate personhood. End the doctrine that money is speech. If I heard any feedback that was negative from constituents as I went door to door promoting this, it was that you shouldn't be spending a lot of time on this. And you want to know what? They're right. You shouldn't be spending a lot of time on this. Amend this resolution tonight. Pass that amendment. Pass this resolution. Get it behind you so that you can get to the things that are important locally, what your constituents want. And we, in Move to Amend, go on to other bodies of government, town board, and the state government. We have more important things to do. You have other important things to do. Let's get this over with tonight. Let's stop going back and forth between committee and this meeting and then back to the committee and then this meeting. Let's do this tonight and get it over with. Thank you for your time.
Lori Stage and then Jeff Furman.
Hi, I'm actually going to read a speech that was written by Jerry Lockwood. She was unable to attend tonight due to her father's in the hospital. And she is the administrative assistant to the Tompkins County Highway Department, and she's been employed there for 13 years, and 11 of those years the highway division has been operating under very poor management and leadership and guidance. And finally, we're feeling confident that the transition with Cheryl Nelson being there is very effective. We all work pretty good together, and she is actually closer to the highway manager than we are. But we all are here to express our support for Cheryl Nelson, and we would like her to be appointed to the position permanently. In the short time that she's been intern highway manager, she has achieved a multitude of accomplishments, such as the division has shifted from dysfunctional to functional. For the first time in several years, meetings in the appropriate staff were held regarding the summer work plan, and most of it associated work orders were prepared prior to the start of the construction season, and the staff was aware of what was going on. She has also made staff accountable for their actions, their decisions, and the assigned work tasks. You may realize that communication with the legislatures in downtown and within the division have improved significantly and is ongoing for the first time in a very long time. People aren't running downtown as they have in the past. When necessary, she asks for and considers input from appropriate staff members before making decisions. She thoroughly understands our budget process. She is strong and extremely capable leader. Overall morale is at an all-time high. She quickly earned and has the support and respect of many of the highway staff, and a petition has actually been around that nearly 70% of the available staff signed to support her. It was also submitted to Joe and Anita. She is committed to making us successful, and she is extremely dedicated to the county. Cheryl has been performing the duties of the highway manager at a salary of the public works administrator when John Lapman was the intern position, and I believe that he was paid the highway manager salary. She has also been saving the county money. Although she may not have a college degree, she has many years of experience and incredible wealth of knowledge, and more importantly, she has proven herself. And she is qualified for the job. Joe recently admitted to the highway staff that Cheryl is doing an excellent job. The message I am hearing is that excellent is not good enough. If the highway division is operating so well, why not leave the things status quo? Why mess with success? Tompkins County boasts itself in promoting diversity. Who better than to fill the position than a female in a non-traditional role? My opinion is that she'll be the best woman for the job. And I would also like to address, there was a comment that Joe made in the last meeting that we had about being qualified, that there's certain qualifications to get a job. Well, most of the qualifications that we have gotten to do that is by on-the-job training, and that is what Cheryl has been doing all along. And she has all of our support. Thank you.
Jeff Furman and then Gretchen Herman.
Thank you. I guess I would like to start off by recognizing that it's May Day, May 1st, and honoring the men and women who have worked so hard in their lives all over the country. Some have died in coal mines. Some can't get health insurance for their kids. Some no longer work 40 hours a week but have to work 60 hours a week just to make a livable income. They certainly don't make a living wage. And this is something I think we should just pay attention to on this 1st of May. We spend a lot of time honoring the job creators and worrying about them. Let's pay attention to the job doers for a moment. I want to spend a little time talking about the living wage thing. But before I do that, I was just listening to the other speakers. I was kind of amazed that half the speakers are coming up here and saying, get the money out of politics. And half the speakers are coming up here and saying, put the money in the hands of working people. There must be something we'd be able to do here with all this money. Maybe we can move it along in a different direction. But I do want to talk about a living wage. It's an issue that I have personally been engaged in for a long time, and I'm going to speak about it wearing a hat from the business community, business world. It's something we have been doing at a business that I'm connected with for over 20 years. And it has turned out to be an incredibly successful way to run our business. Today, we pay $15.97 an hour for anybody who starts work at our company. And we are highly profitable. There's health insurance included. There's a pension plan included. There's training. And there's work to make a dignified life condition for anybody who works there. We pay attention to all that. And we're not alone. There are businesses here in the community that do that as well. There's the credit union. There's 100 businesses that are connected to the Workers' Rights Center. So we can have a big business. We are now global. We are trying to figure out how to deal with what a living wage number is around the globe. It's a little complicated, but we can still continue to do that. So I think that's very important. So I would encourage you in terms of a living wage amendment, to make sure that it's based on a living wage, that you adopt the principle. The principle is incredibly important. It shouldn't be based on a minimum wage plus inflation. You will never get to a living wage if all you consider is inflation. You certainly can say inflation plus something. Let's get there in 4 years. Let's deal with all the problems. But if you're talking about the problems of business, you also have to pay attention to the problems of the men and women who are working every day. The last thing I'll just mention is around the resolution about the move to amend. You know, we're Ben and Jerry's, and we always say, you know, Ben is a person, Jerry's a person. Ben and Jerry's is not a person. And we're working to get the money out of politics, and I believe that should be a very core part of that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Gretchen Herman and then Caleb Thomas.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Herman. I live at 433 Bostwick Road. And yesterday I signed on the dotted line to get solar panels at my house. Yay! Work against gas drilling. But then guess what I saw in the Ithaca Journal today? That the Tompkins County Board of Reps is planning or likely to eliminate the property tax credit that comes with this. I think this is really short-sighted. The whole idea is an inducement for people to do the right thing with something like solar panels. It takes an incredible amount of money. You know, you break every piggy bank you've ever had to start with the upfront money to get this going. And one of the reasons I felt good about it is it would be supporting local businesses and the like. And yet to eliminate the tax credit would probably be a disincentive, and there'd be less business with regard to the solar panels and less local business. I understand that the county has a lot of revenue difficulty because of the tax-exempt status of so much of the land in Tompkins County. However, this is not the way to make it up. If you want to take apart the commercial and the residential, you'll have to go to Albany to really fix the law and make it work properly. It's not right to do it on the backs of the citizens and the small businesses in Tompkins County.
Thank you. Thank you, Gretchen. Caleb Thomas and then Richard, I think it says Furnace.
Okay. Hello, my name is Caleb Thomas, and I live at 501 South Cuba Street. And I want to start out by saying thank you. Thank you for serving here. Thanks for serving the communities. Last time I was in this speaking of the county, was about the mural program around the corner on Court and Cuba. And just, I really love what's, you know, thank you for any of you that voiced your support there and helps make that happen, and it's brightening up another area of our community. I live in down near Southside, which is another, you know, one of the many hubs of low-income neighborhoods in our county. There's many of them, and I know a lot of you can think about the people, the people who are hurting the most in your area that you're representing. And these are the people that I want you to think about when you're making decisions tonight and other nights. I don't know a lot of details about move to amend or about living wage. There's other people that think really well about this stuff that know economics and business much better than I do. And I wasn't planning to speak tonight, but I was really moved today by so much that was happening on the commons and by the rally outside. And so my request is pretty simple. It's just that in each decision that you make in this room, in your committee meetings, in our daily lives, that we think about the people who are hurting the most in our communities. Lastly, I'll just mention Congo Square Market on Fridays. Great place to celebrate community and build the kind of community we want to live in. All of you are invited down. Maybe you came down for the mayoral debates last year. Come on down. It's a wonderful event. And, yeah, thank you so much for being here tonight and listening to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb. Richard Furness is the last one signed up.
Hi, my name is Dick Furness. I live at 111 Clover Lane in Ithaca. I also recently signed on the dotted line for some solar panels. Feel as though the larger issue in my mind is not whether I personally get a tax credit or not, but rather that what can we do to see to it that entities that are pursuing renewable energy wind up being able to do that. There are a variety of subsidies that are explicitly spelled out associated with renewable energy. There are vastly more extensive subsidies that we don't hear about or that other energy producers have managed to substantially externalize their costs associated with producing energy. Do we count wars as part of the cost of getting energy the way we do now? It certainly doesn't show up as an explicit subsidy for some of the techniques we have for energy production. And I really feel as though the issue of the tax of opting out is something that really deserves to be addressed at the state level, or not that opting out deserves, but that the considerations that went into the decision in Albany to provide for this sort of incentive help to recognize the importance of alternative energy, and that choosing to opt out of it, as was suggested earlier, is a rather short-sighted view of things, because the cost that we'll be incurring associated with the cost that we'll be incurring associated with not supporting alternative energy are going to be enormous. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? All right, we're going to go to legislative privilege of the floor, and then Dill, do you want to address the opt-out? Okay. If folks will just stay for an explanation for a minute, and then we will move the agenda around so that if you're interested in something, we'll try not to make you wait too long. Dooley, why don't you start?
Thank you. With respect to the opting out of a part of the real property tax law dealing with exemption for residential and industrial solar and wind and farm waste energy, it's not something that I'm happy about our doing, but we've thought about it very carefully. There are three taxing jurisdictions that will affect Black Oak, the Enfield Wind Farm. Two of the other jurisdictions, the school district and the town of Enfield, have opted out of this exemption. And in order for us to participate in discussion with what a pilot agreement might be, which decides how much the commercial size wind farm might have to pay, we have to opt out of this exemption. And we are well aware that in order to encourage even this local community wind farm, it's important how it gets told to spend money. And yes, we need revenue at the county, but that's not why we're doing this. We would like to help support the wind farm, in my view, by keeping the initial amount we're asking them to pay us low so that they can get started. We have the ability, and it's my intention as the GO Committee Chair, to bring back a resolution for us to opt back in once construction has begun on this industrial-sized wind farm in Enfield. We have the ability to opt in and out. We can do it repeatedly. We have not opted out of this exemption before because we saw no need to, and there are probably 90-some requests for that exemption lined up in our assessment department should the data ever show that the existence of solar panels or wind turbines on a residential structure means that their value has gone up in terms of market sale value. That hasn't happened yet. When that happens, then this exemption for residential will be really important. So we have time to treat the community wind farm in Enfield in a fair way, in my view, and to opt back into this exemption as soon as they start construction, which I think is what sounds so wrong to you all, and it sounds wrong to me too. And you're both absolutely right that the cure for this is to go to Albany and have them see that this particular part of the real property tax law should distinguish between residential and commercial and industrial, which it does. The law does for many other instances, but not for this one. That was kind of long. I'm sorry.
That was great. Thank you very much, Julie.
I have more I want to say on other topics.
Well, why don't you go for it?
For people who came to talk about the constitutional amendment language, which has metamorphosed many times, and I feel particularly sorry for the amount of time Victor has spent with us attending committee meetings, providing us information, seeing the resolutions go this way and that way. It's my intention to withdraw this resolution tonight. I think it needs to go back to committee. We heard from many speakers who made it clear that it needs work. For us to try to do committee work on the floor, even if it's a simple amendment, is really not a particularly good practice. This is a very serious subject. Even though we can't make the ultimate decision, we can be really careful and thoughtful and more comprehensive, I think, in what we pass. And it's my understanding that Legislator Stein, whose resolution is the one that went through government operations, is agreeable to having it returned to committee. I'll ask him about that in a moment. I want to share with you all what you may or may not know. Although it was reported in the journal that I voted against a constitutional amendment at committee, I did so because I didn't think it was ready for prime time. I know that we had not really had any committee discussion. We had lost one of our five-member committee before this came up at the end of a committee meeting, and the resolution passed with essentially no discussion, 3-1. It had various grammatical problems, which is something that I never like to have happen come out of my committee. I'm embarrassed by that. But mostly, it just hadn't had a thorough discussion. And so I think it's appropriate for me to withdraw it and ask that it go back to committee. And I wanted to say that under legislative privilege of the floor so that people didn't sit around waiting to see what was going to happen. Peter, is that agreeable with you?
Well, I don't know the procedure, actually. Does the chair have the right to withdraw unilaterally a motion?
Yes, and it has the effect of referring it back to committee, so it'll go back to
right.
Committee.
I would like to have a few remarks to make when that's done. I was planning to move that myself, but if you want to just move it yourself, okay, but I would like the opportunity to say a few words.
Well, I will withdraw it when we get to the part of the resolution that says add addition or withdrawal of resolutions.
So what?
We have a part of our agenda where you add or withdraw resolutions. It comes later in the agenda. That's when I will withdraw it. And you can certainly talk about it whenever you want.
Okay.
Julie, did you have anything else?
Yeah, but I've talked enough. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Kathy and Carol? Okay.
Thank you. I was really glad to see Jeff here reminding us that today's Workers' Memorial Day. I wore my black jacket. This is the day that we mourn the dead and we fight like hell for the living. I was very pleased to see that all over the country people are coming forward to talk about things that are problematic for them in their lives. A lot of it's economic. people know that our economic system is out of balance. Jeff, again, talked about the lack of balance and how reflected it is in our agenda items tonight. One, saying that we need to raise the minimum wage and make it one that people can actually live on instead of, as one of our speakers tonight spoke about, having to work three jobs and still not having enough to live on, as we know in our legislative work. Many people can work full-time in this county and not qualify, and qualify for public assistance. I'm also glad to see that people all over the country are working to find a way to end, overcome the Citizens United ruling that made corporations artificial persons. This is the way that we on the legislature encourage civic engagement. I want to say how happy I am that all our discussions have been civil and that they're lively and that the exchange of ideas is going to continue. These are not issues that you can just talk about once and then say, okay, we have to rush on to something else, because these are at the heart of our nation's philosophy. So I'm proud to be a worker, a member of the 99% today, and I'm proud of the legislature for dealing with these important and timely topics. And I'm also proud of the people that showed up today and the people that couldn't show up because they were working, but understand that the struggle continues.
Thank you, Kathy. Carol?
Yeah, I also wanted to thank the people who showed up tonight and also to thank the organizers of, that must have been an eclectic group, of a whole day of discourse today. I don't know if any of you were on the Commons today, but there was, there were, must have been 25 different discussions going on. There was an organizational chart with four different time slots, nine different locations, and topics assigned to most of those slots. I wandered around and listened in on some of them. There were groups from ranging from about 5 to 15 people. In each of those discussions that I observed, those discussions were going on in a calm manner, political discourse, far-ranging perspectives were being respected and discussed. The conversations that I observed ranged and flowed around from topic to topic. I understand there was a theme of educational, racial, and labor justice, but the topics really ranged on everything from education to things going on in the community, specifically here, to state and national issues. And the organization of that was quite notable, and the level of discourse was notable, and I do hope that we don't have to wait another whole year to see this kind of thing again. It's exactly the kind of thing that our common spaces should be used for on a regular basis, and I was pleased to see that many of those people and maybe some others showed up to talk to us tonight and give us some of the results of that discussion. So thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Frank and then Nathan.
Thanks, Martha. Two things. First, I'd like to join Kathy Herrera in articulating that many of us are workers, and some of us are still working. And I want to at least let you know that some of us that work for corporations try to work from within. If you have had the opportunity over the years to receive any corporate annual financial statements or any proxy statements to vote on issues that are coming up, I would urge you to review those parts that talk about directors' and officers' salaries. You may find this an unusual thing for some of us, myself included, to be saying, but some of the salaries are obscene. We have some corporations in this very town, some colleagues of my own in the profession that I'm in, are earning what I think is over the top in salaries with all of the bells and whistles attached. They're well into seven figures. And while I probably will not support the minimum wage resolution tonight for other reasons. I think that it's important to not lose sight that there are some people who are making considerably more than they could probably ever spend in their lifetime. Be careful what we wish for, because a lot of these very individuals do support local organizations, many of the not-for-profits in town, so we have to be careful to strike a balance. But if you have an opportunity to read any of the annual financial statements, I think you might be, as I was, because a slew of them come this time of the year, because this is the time for the annual meetings, you might get agita, as I did when I saw some of these salaries or some of the compensation, because it's not just salary. There are other things attributed to them. When someone gets a $30 million one-year recompense, to me that seems a little bit, over, as I said, over the top. On another issue, one of my favorites, consumer alerts, NYSEG was awarded a settlement for overcharging individuals this about a week ago. I don't know all the numbers, but it was well into it was into the millions of dollars. Pay attention. You might want to get a hold of the Public Service Commission. They're trying to decide now how to distribute that money, whether it's back to the people who paid it or were overcharged, or to put it into some other type of fund. But the Public Service Commission is deliberating, is deliberating on that right now. And I'll try to get some more information on it, but I just read the paperwork on it, on Friday. And I'll try to get something and get it to Kathy or Michelle or to Martha. But if you have an opportunity, go back. You're all better at using a computer than I am. You can probably research this a little bit better than I, but just thought I'd tip you off that there's a lot of money on the table. Oh, one last thing. This is May 1st. Later this month, there's a holiday called Memorial Day, and there probably will be a parade or two around the county. So participate if you can. This coming Saturday, there's another event for those of you that enjoy watching horses run. It's called the Kentucky Derby. Just thought I'd tip you off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank. Nathan.
Yes, I just wanted to talk about student loans real quick. There is, right now there's been a big debate about extending student loans, and the House of Representatives just passed a bill, it was a very partisan bill, that extends the student loan rate at 3.4% for one more year. But what isn't being talked about is that it does that by cutting primary and preventative care, especially in women's health programs. So it's a continuation of the war on women. So I think that's something that's important for us to talk about. The Senate is also looking at their own version of a bill that tries to make up the funds that they'll need in order to pay for an extension of student of keeping the student loan rate at 3.4%. And they're looking at it through cutting oil subsidies, which I think is a better way of going. But if this isn't act, if Congress doesn't act on this, the rate will go up to 6.8%. And if it goes up to 6.8%, it will affect about 7 million people in the United States. And these are middle-class folks that are really going to be hurting. You know, in comparison, long-term Treasury notes, you can get it for 0.25%. So I really think we need to put the focus on students. And then also, just real quick, I just wanted to make an observation that now that I'm doing what I'm engaged in campaign-wise, I have never wanted public financing of elections more than ever, let me tell you. And it's just so interesting because while many activists were outside of actually my office doing teach-ins about corporate personhood and talking about the importance of a living wage and all these other issues, I couldn't join people because I had to sit and hit my goal for making fundraising calls. And I think it's just a terrible it's terrible that candidates these days, whether you're Republican or Democrat, have to spend 6 to 8 hours a day making fundraising calls rather than actually learning about the issues and meeting constituents. I hope that we can someday get a public financing of elections. But I think a good first step is making sure that we have reform to Citizens United so that corporations don't have all the power. One of the things that we learned this week at a conference I was at over the past weekend is that there are 17 people during the Republican primaries, for example, 17 people that donated 50% of the super PAC funds that influenced the Republican primary. So that's just the influence. If we don't do something about Citizens United, we're going to have a very small number of people that are very wealthy that can influence elections, and I think that's a big problem that we have.
Thank you, Nathan. It makes me think that we don't have a resolution on that in the pipeline, and there's legislation. There's several different flavors of legislation in Albany right now. That might be, if somebody's interested in writing, that sounds like a really good project to bring forward as quickly as possible before the session ends. We could weigh in on that. Peter and then Jim. Mike.
Boy, with all the weighty things that have been discussed here, minimum wage, a constitutional amendment, I don't know if I could say something that is not weighty, but I do want to. I was at the, but then I'll say something weighty afterwards. I was at the farmer's market a couple of weeks ago, and a gentleman came up to me and said that he had seen me on television. He thought that these meetings, it was good that these meetings were televised, and he had something nice to say about what I had said. I forgot what it was. But then he said, do I represent him on the legislature? And I said, where do you live? He told me. I said, no, I don't represent you on the legislature. He says, well, how can I find out who does? He said, why don't you have on your name tags here the places that you represent? And I thought, what a good idea. It's not easy for us to get in touch with our constituents and vice versa. But I thought that was an idea that was worth bringing up, and I think maybe when we move to our palatial new courthouse, maybe we could have new signs made up that gave the person that saw us on TV some information about what it is that we represent. So let's see. The other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is the resolution that I sponsored, which was much discussed negatively from the floor, and Dooley's resolution to decision not to bring it up and to send it back to committee, and me not contesting that. I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm doing when I say that I am willing to have that done. It might be interpreted from the course of events that I was convinced that, in fact, the piece of legislation that I wrote was not worthy of being adopted, and that's far from true. I believe it's a good resolution. I think it accomplishes something that is extremely important. I have concerns about the other part resolutions that have been discussed. It's an extremely complicated issue. I've spent a lot of time trying to understand this issue and talk to a lot of people, and it is really not easy to sort out. And I've come to the conclusion that most people that talk about Citizens United don't really understand what Citizens United is and exactly what effect it had. So I agree with Dooley that for such a complicated issue, the time that was spent in approving it was not commensurate with the importance and the nature of it. And so there's obviously no rush about it. I'm telling you, the Constitution isn't going to get amended tomorrow. And I think we ought to have a full discussion so that we can do a good job and bring it here. So that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Peter. And for anybody listening, you can call 274-5434. And any of our clerks will listen to your address and tell you who your legislator is. That's also on the county website, probably on the Board of Elections website as well. Thank you, Peter. Jim, Mike, Brian, and Will.
Thank you. This past week I went to the breakfast of the United Way, celebrating making their goal, and I believe Lesman was there also. And what impressed me about that, there was an award given to Cornell University students who are working on United Way, Ithaca College, And I believe TC3 is coming into the fray next year. The Cornell group raised $53K, I believe. Ithaca raised a significant amount of money also. And in the spirit of the Distinguished Youth Award that Pam and I are going to alternate on every month from now to the end of the year, I thought it was important to mention those people and four-year students, the impact they've had on United Way for the 2012 campaign.
Thank you, Jim. Mike.
I'm often one who will complain a little bit about our state government or federal government, some of the things they do or don't do. But I'd like to hand out a compliment tonight, and that is following what happened with our airport. Our airport had a piece of equipment. Joe, you can help me with the name of it, maybe, but it was a glide something. Bob, I should ask Bob in the back. That piece of equipment is vital for a plane landing in bad weather, as I understand it. And a part went wrong with it that couldn't be replaced easily. Our management at the airport knew what to do. They went to our federal senator, Chuck Schumer, who has been very supportive over the years for our airport upstate. And he was able to secure for us a replacement part within a few days after we had to cancel some flights. So I think it was an effort by the federal government to correct a problem that was done quickly, and I think that they deserve some credit for that. I think Senator Schumer and I think our own division here moving quickly allowed us to continue to have the flights that we need for our people here.
Thank you, Mike. Brian.
Thanks. I guess it's not often you can come into a meeting knowing that you are going to be able to fulfill a campaign promise. I think we're getting, just by virtue of some of the resolutions that are coming out, we're getting away, at least in my opinion, away from what it is we were elected to do. I was struck by all of the speakers today. I understand the issues. I understand all the concerns. I'd be more than willing to speak with anybody about any one of these topics. I'd be willing to call whatever representative I need that the purview of the subject matter pertains to. We are not pat with money. We are not running out of things to do, but we are certainly delving into issues that are beyond our purview. I happened to actually write down a couple of little blips of what some people said, and I started with the gentleman that was talking about corporate personhood, where he was telling about going door to door, and he said, constituents want you, talking to us, to work on local issues. I also have a quotation here, take it to Albany. Dooley even said, regarding the solar and wind exemption, go to Albany with it. That, Martha, you just brought up, I believe it was as far as campaign issues, that's another law that we need to change. We've got plenty to do right here, and I'm not sure that we're really affecting change in state law. Sure, you know, we could give an opinion, or any one of us is certainly welcome to call an assembly person or a state senator or whatever. But just looking at tonight's agenda, it appears to me that we're getting away from what it is we really need to do, and that will probably explain why I will be voting no on any of these sorts of issues as a campaign promise, because I definitely heard from constituents, and I hear from them all the time, that they want us to work on local issues. And that's what I will do. That doesn't mean I don't have an opinion on anything. I'd be glad to share opinions with anybody over a cup of coffee or a beer or whatever. But I just feel we need to start to stick to what it is we came here for. And that will explain my votes.
Thank you, Brian. I've got Will, Leslie, then Pam.
Thank you, Martha. Well, Brian, thank you for explaining that, and I certainly appreciate that perspective. I hope you will understand that maybe why I think it's appropriate for us to consider it. I was very, very moved by the number of people and the quality of comments and the thoughtfulness. And to me, this truly is democracy in its most elemental form. People coming to government at a level where they can reach. They can go down and find us and crowd into a room and talk about an issue that, yes, it's beyond our direct purview, but the kind of change they are calling for starts at this level. It starts with people talking and saying, gosh darn, we ought to do something, and getting towns and villages to talk about it. Even though they can't decide it, they can begin to grapple with it and try to come to some kind of vote as to where they stand as representatives of the community. So I do hope that we'll give this some thought. Clearly, we have many other things that we do have control over that we need to be addressing, and it would be a mistake if this was all we did, but I think the implications of the vast amount of money that's pouring into our political system is having a corrupting influence at all levels, and I do hope we'll give this some thought. I wanted to credit Peter with giving great thought and attention to this issue and spending, I think, many hours trying to understand it and talking with his colleagues. He's come to a conclusion that's different than mine, and I hope that he will continue to have an open mind and we can continue that discussion in committee. I also want to thank Peter for pointing out the fact that it's a little bit hard to know who your representative is. Unless you call during business hours and ask one of our wonderful staff, they will be happy to tell you. But I have actually tried going to the Board of Elections map by districts and realizing that it wasn't immediately easy to correlate. And I would suggest that we have something very clickable so you could click on a section of the county and then have the contact information for your representative. Finally, I wanted to comment briefly on the issue that will be coming tonight, which is minimum wage. My memory is not what it used to be, so I didn't quite remember what the minimum wage was when I first started working low many years ago. Actually, my first job probably was sub-minimum. I distributed leaflets for the Fuller Brush Man as a kid. But coming out of college, when I was really thinking about getting a job, the minimum wage was about $1.30, and it's just gone up. And that was like in the late 60s, and that was literally the highest in terms of the buying value that the minimum wage ever got. When $1.30 in those days, as some of you remember, could buy you about 5 gallons of gas, and it could buy you many loaves of bread, and you just go on and on and on. What we've seen since those years is that the buying power, the real buying power of the minimum wage has been going down, down, down. And the kind of stories that we're hearing tonight, I think, speak to our need to do something. I will, when we get to it, be supporting both the temporary move to increase the minimum wage modestly, but I also really, really want us to aspire to something greater and really begin to think about making the minimum wage a living wage. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. I see Peter's hand, but we are trying to have just one bite of the apple per privilege of the floor. I've got Leslie, Pam, Peter, and Pat.
Has he said something weighty yet?
I think so.
We were waiting.
Okay. Well, we'll let him think about it. Leslie?
Thank you. Dooley? Thank you very much for your explanation on the real property law opt-out resolution. Matter of fact, I remember when I read it, I wrote a note on it saying, huh, are we crazy? I wasn't sure. This is the kind of thing we want to encourage. And although I appreciate your explanation, I'm sure it's something I can support, because I really want to encourage more and more people, more and more businesses moving in that direction. Putting up solar panels is no cheap task. It's, you know, those things cost money. So, but I did appreciate it. It made some sense when you said it. I still couldn't balance it with the other thing. So thank you. The more people spoke, the more I thought I had so many things I needed to comment on. Frank, although I will have a bit more to say when we address the resolution on the minimum wage, because it's something that I, through WDIC, had brought, because we felt that it was really important for us as a county to be looking at this. It's interesting to hear you speak of the absurdity of some of the compensation.
Absurdity.
Okay, obscenity and absurdity, all of the above, that many upper-level workers make. Yet within those very organizations, agencies, businesses, they are people who make a minimum wage and who can't make a living off of that minimum wage. So I think it's really important for us to think about supporting those very people in the end. Those businesses, a lot of businesses complain about where, you know, what's going to go under and what's not going to go under and, you know, what sort of cost it'll be to them when they do that, yet we can, you know, have a $30 million, whatever it is, compensation. So those are things to think about. I want to mention, and for you, Brian, looking at the number of people who came before us tonight to speak out tells me that this is the sort of stuff that we should be talking about and we should be bringing. Most people are coming to us and saying, as our elected representatives, we're asking you to please speak on our behalf, to please wane on our behalf to the next level of government. And I think it is our responsibility to be doing some of that. So I don't think it's a waste of time for us to deal with those issues, whether they fall on deaf ears or not. We are representing the people who come to us and asking us to do those things on their behalf. I want to speak to school board issues. School board elections are coming up. I think it's the very Tuesday of our next legislature meeting, Tuesday the 15th. There is a board of elections, a candidate forum for the school board elections. There are four people, I believe, running for three seats, three of whom are incumbents. It is on Thursday, May 10th from 6 to 8, a candidates forum. It will be held at GIAC, and it is hosted by a number of community agencies. I wouldn't even attempt to list all of them because I'm sure I'll forget someone. So I encourage people, you know, it's very interesting that lots of times the school board elections, which is very important, sort of slide onto the radar for a number of our citizens. We have some of the lowest turnout of people going out to vote, but I encourage people to really pay attention because large decisions, big decisions about our lives, our education, our taxes, all of those things are made at the school board level. So please, Thursday, May 10th, 6 to 8 at GIAC, a candidates forum for the school board elections. Speaking of school issues, there have been a series of community conversations with the superintendents of schools. We'll be hearing from folks about what they'd like to see different, what's not working well, anything people want to talk about around education and the school system. He's very open to those. There's another one happening on the 3rd, actually, Thursday, 5:30 to 6:30. Community conversation with Dr. Val Brown, the superintendent of schools, and it will be held at GIAC as well from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Child care is provided, so we encourage people to please come out and meet with Dr. Brown, share your views, your opinions, hear what he has in store, his vision, and think of ways that we all can be supportive and helpful. That's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Pam.
Yes, I just wanted to thank the people for coming here and speaking with us tonight. I think we sit here and talk and make decisions among ourselves, and I think sometimes we forget who it is we are representing. And I think that in my mind, any issue that is important to our constituents, it's an issue that we need to pay attention to. Government doesn't function in a vacuum. Our federal government, our state government, the policies that they make or don't make have a huge impact on our community and on our county. I think an issue such as the minimum wage is an issue that is one that directly impacts impacts us. The number of people that we have, the increase in social services, food stamp users, all of those things are as a result of policies that have been implemented or haven't been implemented on the state and federal level. So I, to my dying day, I think that our democracy is based on people petitioning their government for change. And I know when there was an impeachment resolution, we spoke to that. I think that we have opinions. We reflect to some degree the opinions of our constituents, and it's not that we don't do our jobs as county legislators. We do. I think that we do. We all work very hard to make this county a place where people want to live, and I think that we should be proud of that. But I have no problem with stepping up and speaking to and being involved in state and federal issues, because those issues also have an impact on our community and our constituents.
Thank you, Pam. Peter?
Yeah, real quick, I just can't resist. I have to respond to what Will said. My first job, I was 13 years old. The minimum wage was 50 cents an hour, and that was equivalent to 2 gallons of gas. And so now it was 2 gallons of gas when I was 13 years old. It was 5 gallons of gas 20 years later, and now it's back to 2 gallons of gas. So I thought that's interesting.
Thank you, Peter. Pat?
I just wanted to, again, respond to Will's comment about the website and navigating the website, that the members of the Public Information Advisory Board are working with our IT department to improve our website. And if you would jot down that suggestion you made and send it to me in an email, and also, if anyone else would like to send any suggestions to me, I'll make sure that they get carried forward. Any of my colleagues or anybody that's out there watching, if you've had experience with the county website and you want to comment on it, please let me know.
Thank you, Pat. And I've got Leslyn and Carol.
I'm sorry, I looked at my notes and saw one other thing I wanted to, and it was just to... having read the minutes, I was reminded that I wanted to publicly, because I could not be at the last legislature meeting due to illness, thank Mike and this body for the resolution honoring Corporal Bordoni. And I wanted to be on record publicly just saying how much I know I appreciate the services of our men and women in uniform, and it was very commendable to think about it, to do it, and to also send our support to his family. It was an event that I had my children witness and stand in honor with my husband for this man, who was also a military person, for this young man who gave his life for all of us. And so I really wanted to commend you all on that and say I wish I was here that I could have voted yay several times over on it. That was it.
Thank you, Leslie. Carol?
I just wanted to say a word now, in addition to later, about the public hearing on the real property tax law related to renewable energy. I want to clarify for people who are here or still watching now who might not be later, and make sure that it's really clear that what we're doing tonight is setting a public hearing, not actually passing anything, that there will be more opportunity to come and talk to us after you see what it is we talk about passing. That as I want to clarify my understanding that we don't have authority to change, nor are we talking about changing anybody's tax credits for state and federal purposes. That all we would be talking about doing is things related to our own property tax practices that currently don't give anybody anything for putting in their solar panels or their own wind vanes. So is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then I wanted to just ask that before we have that public hearing, because there is a lot of misunderstanding out there, I hope that we will find ways to put out more press releases and try to get more articles in the various local publications or discussion on the radio stations about exactly what this is, what we are and are not talking about doing. I think that would be really helpful. So I hope that will happen.
Good suggestion. Thank you very much,
Carol.
Thank
you, Carol.
Okay, everybody's probably going to go a second time tonight.
No, Julie. No, I assume that we're finishing privilege of the floor. I wanted to ask what our policy is about recording public comments. They're generally not in our minutes. They're in our notes. But are they only there in a summary form, or are they verbatim? I would ask that you try your best to do verbatim. We've had some extremely thoughtful comments, and I would like to be able to refer to them.
Okay. Anyone else? All right. Thank you all very much. I'd like to now invite Bob Nichols and Courtney Armbruster for our presentation. Bob was manager of the airport, and Courtney is with CNS Companies. Our longtime consultants for the airport. Welcome. And thank you for waiting.
Well, I think it was worth it, actually.
Bob, this is the document.
Yes.
Okay. And this has been sitting on the desk over there in the main room, and after the meeting, I'll put it back. So if you want to look at it.
And it's also available on the website, and it's entirety, including appendices. Just want to take you back to July 2009, which was when you approved a contract for CNS to do the Sustainable Master Plan. It's a long time ago. As you know, it was a groundbreaking project. It's won several awards. It's gotten national attention. And most importantly, it set a standard for airports to follow. It's taken as long as this because it was groundbreaking, and the FAA has been very slow in dealing with some of the steps, and they've also required additional things like digital maps and drawings. But I'm happy to say that a couple of weeks ago they finally approved it. And I thought it would be useful to just spend a few minutes going over the process and to let you know what's going to be happening at the airport over the next 20 years. Courtney Armbruster is here from CNS. She's a Cornell alumna, and I have to tell you, she's here on her wedding anniversary, and her husband is waiting in the corridor for this to be over. Courtney.
Thank you, Bob. I really want to thank first Tompkins County for giving us the opportunity to do such an amazing project. Not every county out there is as progressive and as supportive as doing things in a new way as Tompkins County. So thank you, everyone, for allowing Bob and us to take this journey on this brand new project. I made some lovely boards, and I have nowhere to put them, but I may gesture around at them. I just want to briefly tell you a little bit about the project. I know a lot of people already know a lot. You've seen it in the press. We've been really blessed to have a lot of positive press go around about this, but I'll give you the 30,000-foot level for this. Every airport has to have a master plan on file with the FAA that's approved, that is essentially the 20-year planning document for the airport to let them know what development will be necessary coming up to meet their needs. Well, Tompkins County was due for an update, and CNS was lucky enough to be able to help the airport update that, and Bob had come up with some wonderful suggestions to do it in a little bit different way, and we came up with some other suggestions to find a way to do it that really met new needs that are evolving in the aviation industry right now. So essentially, we did everything that the FAA requires in a master plan because we didn't have a choice, and we decided to go a step further. We wanted to make sure that sustainability was a key element in every decision that went into the master plan. Typically, environmental concerns are something that would be dealt with on an impact basis in a master plan. So say you need to put a new airport apron or extend the runway, you would have to deal with impacts to the environment, such as wetlands, issues like that. But we didn't want to just deal with how can we negatively affect the environment. We wanted to talk about being proactive about positively impacting the environment and the community. So this sustainable master plan is the first in the entire country to integrate sustainability into the entire document, and we're really proud of that. There have been a lot of airports that have seen what Ithaca have done. It's been presented all over the country. We've had national publications. Talk to Bob, talk to us about this. And there's a lot of copycats out there, which, you know, they say it's the most sincere form of flattery, so we're very proud of that. But we still were the only FAA-approved sustainable master plan at this point, so really a trailblazer here and very proud of that. One of the things that we are most recently recognized by is the American Council of Engineering Companies, New York chapter, which awarded a platinum award to the airport for this project. That's a really strong accomplishment. ACEC only gives out a handful of awards every year in different categories. This was in the study category, and I'd like to say the only thing we lost to was a serious, like, New York City giant planning project. So even though I was really hoping for that diamond, that we're gonna say we're very proud of the platinum, and Bob's going to hang it in the terminal building so everyone can see it when they go by. Other awards that we won, I'm sorry, I don't want to block you, but the 2011 Airports Going Green Award. The Airports Going Green is a conference that's held annually, and it's sponsored by the Chicago O'Hare Airport. And the Ithaca project was selected as the project of the year, essentially, by that organization, which is a national award, very impressive. And then two local awards, which are equally as wonderful to receive because they really represent how the community sees what the airport is doing. And that's the 2011 Signs of Sustainability Award from Sustainable Tompkins and the 2012 Get Your Green Back Seal of Excellence from Get Your Green Back Tompkins, which is great. And one of the things that's really most important is a planning document is just a document until you implement it. And that's what's most important about this, is that it's implementable. And what we want is not to have it put on a shelf and then go on with business as usual, but have the things that we've done in this document really apply to the day-to-day activities of the airport. When we make a capital project decision, you know, I'm representing a firm that does planning and engineering and design, we need to look at this document to make decisions about all the projects that are going to happen at the airport. And we're really proud to say that we've already got progress that we can show. For example, we were still finishing up this document when engineers at our firm were designing the new sand storage building that is being constructed right now at the airport. I think it was pretty close to 75 or 90% designed at the time, but we were able to sit down with the engineers and talk to them about the baseline assessments that we've done and the goals that we set for a number of different areas and get them to make ways to change that. What can we do this different? What materials can we use differently? What energy-efficient fixtures can we use differently? And we were able to make a significant change in that building, even though it was that far in. Now, anyone who knows anything about sustainable design knows you really want to do that stuff before a project gets to that point. And we have been able to do that with future projects, which is wonderful. I think one that the public will most probably see in the next 5 to 10 years involves the terminal building. We have a beautiful terminal building. It's not that old, only about, what, 20 years, 25 years, Bob? 1994, I think it was built. But lucky, Tompkins County Airport has been growing. You've been one of only three airports, I think, that has increased passengers since 2007, which is fantastic. And the terminal building is a little tiny now. But the most sustainable building is the one that's never built. So what we were able to do is, for short-term growth, find a way to reconfigure the existing footprint to meet all the needs of the passengers, of TSA, that has requirements that weren't in existence in 1994 when the agency didn't exist, and all the agencies and airlines that work at the airport. So that's our current short-term plan. And once passenger numbers reach a certain milestone and long-term expansion is required, we're committed to making sure that that building is designed in the most sustainable way possible. We actually have a partner, Hunt Architects, who are located here in Ithaca, who have made a name for themselves doing sustainable architecture, as has CNS. And we want to make sure that that building is no less than LEED Silver. So those are just, I could go on and on about a number of projects, and they're actually on one of these boards, but I just wanted to show you some of the things that this master plan has already started to affect and how we hope it continues to grow as a living document moving forward as the airport continues to grow and attract new traffic. So, and we have any questions, Bob and I'd be happy to answer any quick.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Any questions? Frank?
Stephanie, some of us were intimately involved in not only designing but building that terminal. Mm-hmm. Can you say something? You said that we're looking for, we at the time had a 50-year master plan that CNS helped us develop. Now there was, the parts of it were for a 50-year expanse. And somewhere in my archive, as Bob knows, I have a copy of that thing. Can you say something about what the new plan will incorporate, picking up from the plan that we developed back then when we built the terminal, and what milestones perhaps we've already achieved based on that plan as we're going forward? You said this one will be for 20 years.
Well, that's
okay.
The master plan covers a 20-year planning horizon, not just specifically related to the terminal, but all capital development that will be required on the airfield land side. Right. Yeah. The terminal building is just one component of the many capital projects that we've come up for the airport's capital improvement program. I don't know what the specific number is of passenger enplanements to trigger the enlargement of the terminal. Do you know, Bob?
I think it was 160,000.
Yeah, so once you get to that point, I mean, right now the issue that the terminal has is there's a bottleneck that happens when people have to go through TSA screening into the hold room. That's something that's going to be addressed in the short term. I don't have a date on when that project will be undertaken. It's in the short term to us is the next 5 years. So the short term is to make sure everything functions as well as possible in the current space. You know, get TSA the office space that they need, fix the TSA screening area so that it's broader so that people can get through and get to their gates, and also take advantage of amenities in the terminal.
Are you involved in doing anything with the FBO also?
Personally, I am not. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I'd like to see, is there a draft, or will there be drafts of this as you go along that we might...
The master plan is done, and there are actually alternative drawings included in it that show the footprints for the airport terminal, for example, for short-term, medium-term, and long-term expansion. Obviously, this is a plan. Everything in here is just a very rough document. When you get to the point of needing to do that expansion, obviously architects would be more heavily involved and you get a more detailed plan. We'd meet with tenants, we'd meet with passengers and come up with what their needs are. This is really guidelines for people to work off of, so we don't get into that level of depth in a planning document.
Is the university part of the discussion?
As you probably remember, we involved Cornell and Ithaca College in the deliberations and suggestions. That's all part of the appendices in the back. I can send Roxanne down to show you how to access flyithaca.com and get to the master plan on that.
Why don't I come up and she can show me?
Good idea.
Hard copies too. And I forgot, I could talk and talk. I work in communications, can you tell? I forgot to mention that we did work with four college classes, two from Cornell, two from Ithaca College, one was a graduate MBA class, and it was really rewarding to be able to work with the students who, many of whom made this their capstone project. They were able to meet with us, meet with Bob, he facilitated visits to the airport for those students, and they came up with some really interesting, really fascinating reports that we included as appendices, as Bob said. Unfortunately, that section is very, very large. We've tried to break it down as much as possible for the website, but I apologize if you're on a slow computer. They don't get any smaller.
there is a lot. I mean, I looked at it. So it's under FlyEthic and then About Us. Is that where? Okay. And you find it there.
And actually, the hard copy you're looking at there does not include the student reports. They're on a CD on the back page because it would probably double the size of that. document. And we're trying to save trees.
Is that copy in the board office for us to look at?
Can we leave it here?
Is this the draft?
This says
draft final. The final is Bob has copies of that, and that is what is on the website. Most of the chapters are the same. It would just be.
I'll send you down that final. Yeah.
Okay, I'll pass this around. Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Carol?
Yeah, well, that was part of what I wanted to talk about was could we leave a copy here in the office for people to see and make the link maybe a little bit more prominent so for a while so that people can get to it either on the airport site or maybe somewhere else, at the county front page or you know, somewhere where it's really highlighted. And I just wanted to just say a word about Bob because, you know, you introduced it and you're really entirely too modest. The acclaim that Bob's gotten around the country and the recognition, particularly with the award in Chicago, it was really a very big deal. And Bob has really, you know, quietly and modestly, but stuck his neck out, making sure that we have this kind of thing and that we stay in this kind of forefront. And that it means a lot. Thank you.
Another thing I neglected. See, I made notes and it was worthless, but. The Ithaca project actually was so impressive to the FAA that they signed right on to this, as you know. They have actually instituted a 10-airport pilot program for sustainability planning that's currently ongoing right now that should be wrapping up within the next year. And they recently announced that the FAA will be funding sustainability efforts at airports as part of other capital development. Previously, they didn't make that eligible funding. So if you wanted to, you know, do a sustainability project on an airport, you kind of had to scrape those funds up on your own. Now they're being more generous with those funds. I can't give you the specific details, but they're definitely interested in supporting these types of projects, and we really hope that Ithaca and other airports are able to take advantage of that for a lot of the upcoming projects we have.
That's great. Kathy?
Something that hasn't been overtly stated, but I assume is part of the long-term product of this is well, the airport's an enterprise, and so I'm guessing that part of the bragging rights about this have to do with ultimately saving taxpayer dollars. Is there savings associated with the sustainability that we can encapsulate for the public and for me and my colleagues?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. One of the best things about going green, about being sustainable, is that you do realize savings, and one of the biggest that Ithaca can take advantage of is energy efficiency. They've already had one audit done in the terminal a while back, but we've made a number of suggestions which are captured in the master plan that can have very, very short payback periods. Water savings, not as big a money saver here just because of the nature of the climate that we're in. Savings especially, if you looked at traditionally, someone would have said, oh, our terminal building is too small. We would have just put an addition on it. It wouldn't even have been a second thought. But today the question is, do we need to do that? Can we make do with what we have by finding a way to make it work? So not doing construction like that is a huge amount of savings. And then once we do put the addition on the terminal, it will be LEED Silver or higher, which will guarantee considerable savings, again, with energy and other materials. So
thank you. I saw in there about the advisory board, aside from the students, was it the Air Services Board, or was there a separate group that was advisory on this?
It was a group of stakeholders, which included the Air Service Board, just people from all over, including Cornell professors, and just a cross section of everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How
many legislators
are on the board?
Who was that?
Dooley.
Great.
And we met with Joe several times too.
Wonderful. Did you have a question, Dooley?
I had hoped that one of the things that we would see happen soon is a different approach to landscaping.
Actually, landscape management is one of the areas in there. We have a landscape architect and a certified arborist who actually went through and looked at all the plantings. One of the biggest initiatives is a low and no-mow zone. Mm-hmm. As a lot of you know, you could put on a lot of the grass surface around runways. It's not necessarily necessary. But we are looking at ways to really minimize how much inputs, you know, chemical, labor, et cetera, go into maintaining landscape. And the biggest landscape area at the airport is the airfield and all the grass that surrounds the runway. So that is something that we're working on. That has to be done in collaboration with the wildlife hazard plan to make sure that we don't have any wildlife attractants, for safety reasons, obviously, to be near the runway. So we have to find a balance between those two things.
Any other questions?
Well, thank you very much, and congratulations on this and on the approval and on your anniversary, Courtney.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you all very much. Oh, that's terrific. It's been a long time coming. We really appreciate it. For my report, I would like to actually, I'm thinking perhaps we should, we still have folks in the audience, perhaps we should take up, before any of the reports, take up the minimum wage resolution. Jim, would you like to take, as Budget Committee Chair, take us to Resolution I?
I would. It is Resolution I, revised as adopted by Budget and Capital Personnel Committee, in support of Assembly Bill 9148, increasing the minimum wage in New York State, and I would move that.
Seconded by Mike. And Mike, was, Jim, would you introduce what the committee did this afternoon?
Well, the committee met last week, and we determined at that point that we had a resolution that came from WDIC, and it was significantly longer than the one that we have here. And it seemed to have two parts to it that, you know, one was supporting 9148, another was having to do with specific numbers in living wage. What the committee determined was that they asked me to come up with a resolution that we would meet on at 5 o'clock. In the meanwhile, if that's a proper use of the word meanwhile, Legislator Dooley Kiefer looked at our resolution and made some amendments. So what I had agreed to do was bring the amended resolution that Dooley worked on to the committee. And that's the one you have in front of you here.
Thank you, Jim. Kathy.
Thank you. Point of information for my colleagues and for the public. And Leslyn, I hope you'll help me and correct me as we go on with this. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee had passed a resolution in support of increasing the minimum wage in New York State to a living wage. It passed our committee, and it was that original resolution that went to the Budget Committee for consideration. At the Budget Committee, revisions were made, resulting in mostly what you see before you as the Budget Committee's resolution. However, in anticipation of the fact that the resolution that survived budget might not resemble what went through WDIC in terms of exhorting for inclusion of a minimum wage being raised to a living wage, and with support and encouragement from Chair of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, Leslyn McBean Claiborne, I introduced as a member-filed resolution, which you'll see on as item number 13, individual member-filed resolution, this resolution number L, which is actually the original resolution in support of increasing the minimum wage in New York State that was passed by committee. So I wanted to call your attention to this because many of us that support raising the minimum wage understand that people in Tompkins County and in New York State cannot support their families on a 40-hour wage that is at the currently at the minimum wage, nor could they support their families on a wage that was raised to amounts recommended by either one or the successor resolutions, $8, $25, or $10 an hour, respectively. The resolution L, I'd like to suggest for your consideration at some point during this discussion, and with the help of my colleagues, I'll hope that we can introduce it either as an amendment, as a substitution, or whatever is the appropriate way. But I want to make sure that this is part of the discussion because it was the first one that was acted on by a committee of the legislature, and I believe this will enhance the entire discussion because, after all, that's what May Day is about, us talking about what the needs of the workers and the people that are spending money in the economy to keep it growing and improving in New York State are about. And I'm very happy to discuss small business and the effect either worried about or hoped for that such a raise to the living wage might have.
Thank you. Jim?
I did not say it out loud, but I would like to say it out loud that the thrust of our resolution is that the minimum wage is $7.25 and it would move to $8.50. as would the Senate Bill 6335B, and then the future increases in the minimum wage would be tied to the CPI. And that's the resolution that I believe Speaker Silver had.
And further, Dooley's addition that was adopted by the committee said right. that the Tompkins County Legislature strongly urges the New York State minimum wage be increased to $10 an hour by January 1st, 2014.
You're right. Thank you.
So that's another substantive change. All right. Carol Dooley, Mike.
Wait, did Leslin have her hand up first?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Leslin. Carol Dooley, Mike, Leslin.
Okay. I think that New York State is a very high-cost state. We all recognize that. And that it's embarrassing that our minimum wage is so low. I think it's very embarrassing that the federal minimum was raised before New York State thought to raise its minimum. New York State only went from the 715 to the 725 because the federal minimum wage was raised to that. At the federal level, they're talking about raising it up to $9.50. I don't think $8.50 is enough. And I don't think it's enough for New York State to be talking about a wage that is starting to be talked about as nationally not enough to support people in places that are much lower cost states to live in. Mississippi, pick your state. This resolution, in any case, is urging New York State to take an action. I would like this body, of all bodies around the state, to be urging New York State to do so from a base of a living wage. I understand that that varies by county, city, region of the state. I think if it ever got to that point at the state level, they could grapple with the notion of how do you set a living wage dependent on your particular location. I think it's unlikely to get to that point, but I do think that Tompkins County ought to set that standard. So, and I also think that New York State won't do anything, or is less likely to do anything, unless they have bodies like ours pushing to do something beyond the compromise. If we only push for the compromise, then you get a compromise on the compromise, so we may end up lower than 850. I do think it's appropriate for us to weigh in. I think it's appropriate for those members of our public to come and push us, and I think it's appropriate for us to push the state. And so I would like to move to substitute resolution, what's currently resolution L, for the one that's on the floor.
Okay, is there a second?
Point of information, what is on the floor exactly?
Resolution I, sort of the revised, as adopted by the Budget Committee this afternoon.
Yeah.
You should have a copy of it.
Well, that's not the one that's in the packet.
No. It's in the red folder.
Thank you.
Is there a second for the move to substitute, motion to substitute? Will seconds that. So that is what's before us now. But I have Dooley, Mike, Leslin, and Peter, if you want to...
No, I don't want to. I take me off the list.
Okay. Dooley.
Yeah, I am not on the budget committee. I attended not today's, but the regular budget committee meeting. It was clear that membership on the budget committee, and I think, Kathy, was you weren't at that meeting, the sentiment there was to not have any language in the resolution that dealt with the livable wage. And I was disappointed, but it was clear to me that that's what would go through the budget committee. So my attempt to improve it was to make clearer some of the history of the living wage, of the minimum wage in the state, and to indicate that we could do better than the $8.50, although the budget committee wanted to support Assembly Leader Silver's resolution, bill. And it turned out there was also a Senate bill, which in some ways is better than Speaker Silver's bill, but they're both improvements on what there is now. So I worked with that, and I stole some of the whereas language from the WDIC resolution. I would support a separate resolution specifically dealing with livable wage. At the budget committee meeting, I talked about how I thought the resolution could say, yeah, we support Speaker Silver's bill, and we think that it would be reasonable to go beyond $8.50, and to say that we in Tompkins County have the benefit of having a good analysis of what a livable wage is here, and to ask the state to undertake a comparable analysis for all the regions of the state and to move in that direction. So that's what I was hoping the budget committee would do at its original meeting, but that's not the direction it went in. And it was interesting to hear Nate, who was had immediately at his fingertips the budget calculator from Penn State, is it, that has information about every county in New York State and what the livable wage is here. But it's really not usable, in my opinion, because it doesn't include health care. It doesn't include retirement. It doesn't include any money for anything that could be considered recreation. It's not what we use in Tompkins County. So the most we could do, I think, is ask New York State to do a study and move in that direction. So WDIC's resolution doesn't do that. It attempts to apply Tompkins County's numbers to the state. And that doesn't seem quite right to me either. So although I support letting our state legislature know what we do here and that a livable wage is an absolute correct way to approach this, I don't think it's correct to say that the whole state should use our numbers. So I can't really support the WDIC resolution, but I would love to work on a separate resolution that does what I just described.
Thank you, Julie. I've got Mike, then Leslie. Nathan, is your hand up?
Yeah. Okay. I concur a lot with what Julie just said. I think this needs to be in two separate actions. Because of the reasons Dooley mentioned about the living wage and the fact that New York, we're asking the state to do something statewide. And I think we need to recognize that it would take some time and would take some real thought and research at the state level to come up with a reasonable plan. On the other hand, we have something that's about to be hammered out by three men in a room. Like it or not, that's the way the process works. And there is the Senate and Assembly bills out there for an increase in the minimum wage, and I'd like to see us go on record supporting them, possibly whether or not it will influence the Assembly and or the Senate and or the governor. I don't know. But I think it would make sense for when there's specific legislation there for us to comment on, to take this effort and send it forward. So that's why I support it.
You support...
What's on the table?
What's on the table is a question of substituting L for I.
I'm sorry. I'm behind the times. I'm speaking to the original... original resolution.
Okay, well,
I'm not
said,
in favor of substitution. I'm sorry. I missed the... the second, I guess, on that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Leslie.
I'm in full favor of the substitution. Interesting enough, I appreciate all the work that people have done in trying to come up with something that we can all rally behind. We're all sitting in this room, and we know that a minimum wage, even if it's raised to $8.50, is not sufficient to allow people to have a decent, not even decent, to have a living, to have a living and feel like a satisfied human being without having to depend on some of the very services that Joe pointed out in our budget retreat last night. Those numbers are going up. So $8.50 is not nearly enough. And as I even look at this resolution, I wish that I had done something different than just saying at least supporting up to the $8.50. And would encourage more. One of the things that struck me in the resolution, the first one that was on the table, was the whereas that speaks to that if minimum wage have kept pace with inflation, it will now be $10.39 per hour. And in retrospect, that's probably what I should have been asking the state to consider, instead of the $8.50 that they're considering now. No, it is not a clean process to try to figure out what a living wage is. But as Dooley mentioned, we have probably one of the more comprehensive studies and looking into what a living wage would be. I appreciate the information that Nate sent because, you know, I started to do some average calculations on my own and figured, oh, wow, well, that $11 number seems to be sort of the magic number. So I'm torn because I do not want to be sitting here voting against increasing the minimum wage. But I do not think that increasing it to just $8.50 is good enough. And that's why I will support the substitute resolution unless there's room to amend those numbers to make it something higher than $8.50, which is not the bill being considered at this point.
Okay, thank you. Nathan?
Yes. Well, I absolutely support boosting the minimum wage in general, you know, and we can talk about it when we get to the main discussion. But in terms of the substitute, I have trouble supporting the $12.78 only because New York City just passed a resolution for a living wage in New York. I mean, well, the city council did, I'm sorry. And theirs was $10 an hour, $11.50 without benefits. So if we are asking for $12.78 here, I think it's a little inconsistent with what they're doing down in the city. And they have a lot of labor and other progressive organizations that are also supporting that too. So, I mean, I think that Dooley's compromise of $10 an hour is reasonable. But overall, though, I think the point is just for us to start discussing that a minimum wage should be a living wage. And anything that does that, I'm willing to support, if that makes any sense. Thanks.
Thank you, Nate. Did you said City Council, New York City Council just passed
it? Yeah, they just passed it. It was about a day ago, and it was $10 an hour. $10 an hour with benefits, $11.50 without.
Yep. And that is the minimum wage for the city?
Yes, without, and then $12.78 with. Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry, without benefits and $11 with. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks very much.
Is just allowing people that extra dollar.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
Will.
So I will be supporting this resolution. That's why I second it. And I recognize it's not perfect, and that it is literally just attempting to send a message to Albany. I had been under, you know, I thought that the concept of a living wage was not generally understood, and that may in fact still be the case. But this morning I indulged in one of my guilty pleasures, which was sitting and watching C-SPAN. And the topic of the day was, should we increase the minimum wage? And while there were a predictable number of callers who made the argument that, you know, we shouldn't be burdening business and that these are all young people and that nobody really has to live on the minimum wage. I was surprised to hear people calling from, I think, at least three different states talking about the need for a minimum wage to be a living wage. And this was not Ithaca, this was not New York State, but this was something that was happening nationally. And I think, admittedly, it's not still in most people's understanding, but I would hope that we could go on record, either through this substitute resolution or a separate one at a later date, to support that very, very important principle. I also recognize that in practical terms, there's something happening in Albany, and, you know, a little something's better than nothing. So if this fails, I will support the lower. But I don't think we should give up on the principle because people are hurting, and we really need to support their efforts to make things better.
Tim.
I will not be supporting the substitute resolution. I thought Legislator Kiefer put it as good as it could be put in trying to put this resolution together and still recognize the living wage concept. I agree with her and I agree with Mike that a separate resolution would to me seem to be the way to go to let the legislature know, state legislature know, that Tompkins County would like them to move toward a living wage, whatever the number happens to be, if they could conceive of a number that would, fit all the area of New York State. I'm not certain they could do that. I think it would almost have to be regionalized to do something like that. But I would certainly support a second resolution if that ever made it to the floor, but not the substitute.
All right, anyone else? Ready to vote on whether to substitute? Okay, all in favor of substituting resolution L for I, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Six opposed. Nine, that fails 6-9. So we are looking at resolution I, which is back on the floor, revised I. Is back on the floor. Nothing.
I'd like to move an amendment to resolution I.
Sure.
And the second to last resolve urges New York State minimum wage to be increased to $11.67 an hour by January 1st, 2014. So instead of $10, I'd like to change that to $11.67. An hour by January 1st, 2014.
Kathy, is that a second?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. So that amendment is on the floor. Dooley?
I just wonder what the source of the amount is.
The source of the amount is the current living wage number in Tompkins County.
All right. Any other discussion?
Which is in...
With benefits, right?
With benefits.
Carol?
Yeah, I did a little bit of research before I came here about looking at the question, who can pay this living wage? Is it accurate that businesses will have trouble doing this? And so I looked over the list of employers in Tompkins County now who pay that living wage. And I was pleasantly surprised to see what it included. It included banks. It included nonprofits and profit-making businesses. It included several food markets. And these are, you know, businesses that you wouldn't necessarily think would have stepped up and said, we can do this. Small retail, healthcare. Doctors' offices and other kind of healthcare organizations, both profit-making and nonprofit housing-related businesses. Tompkins County is always on that list. Accountants and churches, and you know these are businesses that are often those kinds of businesses are often held up as as the kinds of business that might have trouble. And we have 79 businesses here saying we can do that. Nathan, I heard, where did I hear you speak recently, where you talked about having to live in Washington, D.C. on a low amount of money. Mm-hmm. New York City may have passed a compromise of $10 an hour, but I challenge you to live even as well as you did in Washington in New York City on $10 an hour. And I think that 11, I would have picked a round number because I do understand.
I voted for the last substitute. Right. You realize that, right?
Oh, no, I actually couldn't see you down. Okay,
yeah, so
I mean, I would have made
it. I was just stating a fact. Yeah.
I would have made our number a round number to sort of recognize that Tompkins County isn't every county. But I'm happy to support this substitution as well as the last, and urge you that whether this passes or the other one, that we all send a strong message to as strong a message as we can to New York State, that this can be done, it is being done, and that we believe it should be done by everybody.
I've got Pat and Jim, and then Dooley.
Thank you, Martha. I see our effort here tonight is having two parts to it. One, to consider the Senate and Assembly bills that are currently under consideration in Albany and whatever it is that we might do to support their passage. The other having to do with encouraging the adoption of a living wage across New York State. And the way I'm looking at this is that if we pass a relatively clean, so to speak, resolution that speaks simply to those bills that are in the Senate and the Assembly, that they would likely be more supportive of passing that legislation, although it's not the goal that we would like to see. I think that there is merit in raising the minimum wage, and that I think that there's probably a better chance to do this in the near future than there is a chance in the near future to get a living wage. So I would prefer to support, and what I am going to support, are the idea of two separate resolutions. The one tonight, that's the one that was revised by Dooley that does not include the living wage, but I would certainly be willing to consider, and I would hope that we would come back and take a look at language that would be supportive of moving to a living wage.
Thank you, Pat. I've got Jim, then Dooley, then Peter.
I'm going to pass.
Dooley?
Well, I am sympathetic to what Leslin's trying to accomplish, but since there is absolutely no mention of living wage in this resolution, that number seems so incredibly arbitrary. If you were going to make it to the number that would have been arrived at had inflation simply continued, I could imagine supporting that, but I can't support this, and I really hope we can do something to explain our living wage approach. We do livable wage, not living, I think is the term. To explain Tompkins County's livable wage to New York State and try to move that concept forward in a separate resolution.
But the other one would be my next amendment.
Okay, Peter?
Yeah, I wish I could be more enthusiastic about this. I'm all for everybody having a living wage, but I just don't know anything about it. I really don't. I don't know the counterarguments. I know the economy of New York State is fragile. I have the sense that if the Assembly is now looking at this bill, it must have been seriously considered exactly what the pros and the cons were. They may not come out with the right answer, but in fact, I have some confidence that it has been thought through. When these other numbers come up, you know, it's nice to say everybody ought to be making more money, and I do understand that at the lower levels that it is very difficult to live on these things, but I just feel I don't know enough about it, about the possible unintended consequences of doing this, to be able to to vote for it. It's not a happy position to be in.
Okay, Jim and then Leslin.
The whole purpose of this for me is I want to support what's going on in the New York State Legislature. I have read recently that the governor seems to be behind it. Generally, we speak of the governor in angry tones. This time, I'm supporting the fact that he is, he has, in a way, come out in support of the 850 number in the assembly. I think we have the opportunity here, and I don't want to use Frank's word, put him on the spot. We do have a small business owner here in the legislature who can answer directly what the impact is on a small business that has to now abide by a law that may raise whatever they're paying per hour a significant number of dollars. But I'm hoping that at the end of all this, we can at least support the resolution that we brought to the floor this evening.
Jim, thank you. Leslin?
I was just, two things. I was trying to find out what the Senate bill was, because someone thought it was slightly different or better.
It has one raise to 850, and then the next year it goes to 925, and thereafter it's indexed.
Okay.
So it's a little better.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're ready to vote on the amendment. So we're on resolution I, and the only change is the top of the second page. So the second last resolve, instead of $10, it says $11.67, right?
Yes.
What? The amendment we're voting on is whether to substitute $11.67 for $10 on the second page there. Ready? All in favor of that change, raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That's 7-8. That fails 7-8. Okay, Leslin.
Okay, I'll try one more time, although it's not what I came in here intending to do, and would ask to have that number in the second resolve changed from $10 to, I feel like I'm compromising the original mic, to $10.39 per hour, which is reflected in the final whereas, as what the minimum wage would be now if it kept up with the rate of inflation over the last number of years. And I don't... What year are we in? 2012?
Yes.
It's 2012.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. No, that's fine. And would also beg to substitute 2014 to 2013. January 1st, 2013, instead of 2014. So $10.39 an hour by January 1st, 2013.
Okay, so there's not all that additional language, just you're changing the number and the date?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Is there a second?
Yeah.
Dooley. Second set? Okay. Discussion? Kathy?
My interest is in us as a community that espouses locally grown, that talks about sustainability, that really talks about the workforce and the importance of developing the workforce, acting in a way that's consistent with our philosophy, and that is acting in a way to allow hardworking residents of Tompkins County and to model for New York State the notion that if people are willing to work hard, they should be able to make enough that they don't have to go on public assistance and be a burden on the taxpayers. This is the situation that we're now in. We have major corporations that don't pay their workers enough so that government has to assist them. That's us. That's what got us in the pickle that we're in. If a progressive county like us can lead, as we do in so many areas, hydrilla, fracking, in other areas with regard to sustainability, as you heard from the airport here, things that actually cost us an outlay of money. If we can lead and show the state that this is something that we have recognized and that we see as developing not just our local economy, but restoring New York State to its former economic greatness. I think eventually people will start to hear us. I have problems with the notion of compromising and compromising and compromising, because what we end up with is little more than lip service to a worthy idea and goal. I believe that, and you know, this may be sacrilege to some, our current governor isn't really a saint protecting workers. As a matter of fact, the service that he's given in terms of implementing Tier 6 and some other not worker-friendly goals have been, in my opinion, damaging to the working class in this state, because of the fact that people are working their lives away. There's no retirement anymore. You've heard this. Some have referred to my words as pontificating. We did see a representative group of people, some of whom are business owners and have been small business owners, that are saying enough, and this is happening all over the country. I'm not willing to compromise on this. What I came in here tonight hoping that we would get was a vote sending a message to New York State that a living wage, which can also be known as a livable wage, is something that we're interested in. And I challenge local municipalities across the state, the same municipalities that can come up with numbers at the drop of a hat that tell you what the cost of living is in their community, that it's not that hard to come up with a living wage. We did it here, and as many will tell you, public discourse here is lengthy and deep. And we did it here, and we've continued to do it. We're in the vanguard, and I would just like to see us urge action that is consistent with our philosophy. And so if we can't get some kind of a vote on this, I really don't see any point in supporting a minimum wage resolution at all, because it's basically a head fake. It's not really doing anything.
Leslie and then Mike.
Oh, Kathy, please don't be sacrileging.
Well, I could say a lot more.
Kathy, I hear you, and it burns me to the core to feel that we have to go to this place. We are a body of people who believe in basic human rights and basic human dignity. Not too long ago, we were debating on this very floor the millionaire's tax and the principles behind something like that, that, you know, keeps the wealthy wealthy and even richer and the poorer poorer. And this sort of reminds me that here we are at a place where even with a raise to $10.39 an hour, with the state of our economy, with the increases in prices and housing is off the charts for so many people, that it's not enough. But at least I feel that it is a message being sent asking your state government to really, really take a look at this. Like, I'm not sure where $8.50 came from. That feels like just an arbitrary number to me. But here is a number that has some teeth behind it. So that if we had been doing our work keeping up with our rate of inflation, this is where it will be. So can you at least consider this? And again, although it burns me that it's not enough, I feel at least there is some teeth behind it that we can send this message. If we can send a message to say, you know, we are continuing to have this wide gap between our people who can afford to live and people who can't afford to live, we can send a message to say, please, let the people who are struggling at the bottom of the totem pole, okay, get something that will allow them to feed themselves, clothe themselves, and house themselves, you know, which is the basic human right. So I urge all of you, regardless of where we are, to please consider supporting this. And I am encouraged hearing around the room the sentiments around bringing a separate resolution urging New York State to consider the living wage
factor, which I do intend to bring back to this body and hope that those sentiments will be reflected in the votes as we do that as well. I'm happy to make that separation, but hope that people will go there. So I am asking all of you to please think about those folks who are struggling every day. And those businesses, like I said earlier, that can afford to give $10,000 and $20,000 bonuses, even that low, and people who are not making $20,000 to be able to live. Just live.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm passionate about it. I'm not sacrilegious, but I'm passionate.
Mike.
I just wanted to point out an anomaly with Leslin's amendment. If we change the year to 2013, if the state adopted the minimum wage, it would probably go into effect January 1st, 2013. So we're saying 850 and we're saying 1039. Basically, it'll be the same date.
Does anybody know? I was wondering about that. If they pass it, when would these bills? What's the effective date? I don't think I see that in here.
Probably depends on when they pass.
Okay, who can Google it?
50 on January 1st, 2013.
Is that right?
According to the Senate bill. Mm.
Okay.
Can I say January 2nd,
2013?
You may.
Mayday.
Mayday. Mayday.
All right. Leslin, do you want to make an adjustment to this?
No, I don't. If somebody else wants to.
Okay. Pat and then Carol?
I think it's unfortunate that these two concepts of supporting an actual bill that is before the Senate and the House in Albany has gotten into the hopper with the concept of supporting a livable wage, because I think by having this discussion as a whole that it's easy to lose sight of the fact that those of us who would like to support a livable wage in a resolution would also like to be able to support the efforts of our senators and assembly people in Albany who are currently working to pass this bill that is actually before them. And that I think the intent of the original resolution here was to be able to say to those people in Albany that are already supporting it, thank you for this action that you've taken. We support what you're trying to do. Please go ahead and get it passed. And to the people who are not supporting it, that to demonstrate support for raising the minimum wage. And to me, that seems fairly simple. The idea of where did $8.50 an hour come from in our resolution is simple. It came from action that's happening in Albany and our attempt to support that action. And to me, that is very separate from supporting the concept of a livable wage, which I still continue to think should be dealt with in a separate action. I think it confuses the issue if we try to change the figures in this resolution, because I don't think it gives a clear message to our elected representatives in Albany.
All right. Carol, me, Peter, and Leslin.
Okay. I was actually going to speak a little bit to what Pat is, but I'm not sure that I'm understanding. My understanding is that we've now separated the living wage from this. That what the resolution that we now have on the floor, am I correct?
Does not have anything to do with
the
living wage.
Has nothing to do with living wage. What I like about what's on the floor is that we would be supporting what New York State is doing, but we would be saying, do it better, do it a little higher, and do it sooner. What struck me, one of the things that struck me from the comments tonight was the person who talked about the fact that if we started a number that isn't high enough to support people in New York State and then inflate it with the rate of inflation, we never get to where people can afford to live. So I would like to urge New York State to do what they're talking about doing, but do it a little higher and do it a little sooner. So this substitution that's on the floor right now, the amendment that's on the floor right
that's
now, does that to me, and I hope that would be a good compromise for this body. I also would hope, I wanted to come back to something that Frank talked about. When we come back, as people come back with the living wage discussion, maybe, Frank, you would be willing to come back with speaking to your notion of the difference in pay between the top and the bottom. I know that one of the gentlemen who spoke to us, Tanya, the one from a big company, the big company successfully for many years passed something that said that the highest paid person wasn't going to earn more than five or seven times what the bottom is. And I don't know if they're still there, but that concept that you raised, I think, is a really good one. And I would urge you to craft something that maybe the rest of us could support on that concept as well when we come back with these others. But for now, let's do it.
Take a second. I'm happy to vote for the 1039, but I think the January 1st, 13 is a problem. I hope somebody will move an amended date, and I hope that we can get the support out there for this. I think we can pass this resolution with this number if we fix the date. Peter, and then Leslin, and then Jim.
Yeah. When I listened to those speeches there that these people made coming in about this issue, I thought the most poignant one I heard was the first person that spoke, a young man, who talked about what it was like living on this minimum wage. And I thought, how would I feel if that's my son out there? And I realized what the issue is, but then there's something else he said. I know it's not, one wants to forget this, but you can't really, is that what he said is, and he lost his job three times. He lost a minimum wage job three times. And it's not trivial, okay? One really has to ask the question of, would he be losing a job four times if the minimum wage was increased? And I personally have no idea what the answer to that question is. And when you talk about, Cornell as an employer can afford to pay this, yes, Cornell can afford to pay this, and it makes sense for Cornell to have a happy workforce because they're wealthy. They're a corporation that has a lot of money behind them, and they wisely pay money to get better work from happier workers. But we're talking about people who are at the bottom of the economic scale, where startup business, restaurants that come and go that maybe can't pay these wages. I have no idea. And that's what makes it very difficult for me to vote for this. And again, I say that I'm happy to vote for the one in Albany because I believe it has been researched and they have thought through this issue and have decided that this wage will not hurt the level of employment, will not create more unemployment. And I myself don't know that answer is yes for the higher numbers that we people here are bandying around. And, not that I don't realize how little money those numbers are, $10.50 or $11. It's not very much money. I don't think I could live on it. But nonetheless, you don't want to do something that's going to hurt the people that you're trying to help. And I just honestly don't know the answer to that question.
Leslin.
Sorry to my stomach burns. I no, Peter, it's the age-old argument that if you pay your bottom folks more money, you're going to hurt the bottom folks. But the top folks never get hurt. It's the age-old argument, and someone needs to stand up and say that, no, it doesn't have to be so. Carol pointed out a number of all levels of businesses in our community that are paying people a wage that they can live on.
Yep.
Okay, this is not about a living wage. This is about what the minimum wage should be. I'm not sure that $8.50 was that researched and came up with or whatever. I still haven't found anything about it, but it's there. It's a number that was decided on, or $7.25 or $7.15, whatever those numbers were. Okay? And if we continue to do that, people will continue to be falling into this abyss of serious poverty more and more, and I am just asking people to think about it. This doesn't have anything to do with the living wage. Carol said it nicely, so because I was listening to Pat, and I said, this doesn't have anything to do with the living wage. I said I will bring a separate resolution to deal with that issue, because I think we should be talking about it as a county, and as a living wage employer, we should be talking about is encouraging the state. But that argument, and there isn't research to support one side or the other as much, but sometimes we just got to step out on doing what's right for human beings.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie. Jim Dooley Frank.
I will pass.
Dooley.
I've moved to change January 1st, 2013 to April 1st, 2013, which I believe is the start of the state's fiscal year.
All right. Is there a second for that? Leslie seconds that. Thank you. All right. So that is the question before us. And this is, of course, a strongly urge.
It's a strongly so urge.
Certainly sends a message.
Is it friendly to the movement? Actually, it's friendly.
Okay, that's friendly.
It's friendly.
So Leslie, and who seconded? I can't remember.
It was me.
I seconded.
So it's friendly.
And Dooley said, well, good. Then that's decided.
No.
Okay. Kathy?
We are friendly.
When we vote, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Are we ready to vote on this as an amendment? Oh, I'm sorry. Frank, you're on the list.
Yeah. Since that was friendly, that's not under discussion.
Right.
Okay.
Now we're back to the main motion as amended.
Okay. Let me make an observation.
No. We have to vote on the amendment. Okay.
You have to vote on the amendment, but right. The change in date was accepted friendly,
yes.
So that's
right.
Not under discussion.
Right.
I just want to make an observation. It's 8:10. We have literally not begun the main agenda yet. We voted on one resolution, and that was the substitute that Kathy brought forward, Resolution L, in some manner, shape, or form. My observation is I hope that all of us are going to stick it out and be as respectful for committee reports and whatnot. Martha made an attempt a couple of meetings back, a couple of emails back, in trying to reorder the agenda so that different things took place at different times. This is just an observation. I know some people fade when it hits 9 o'clock, and some people leave, and I really hope you're going to stick around, because some of us have reports to give that have nothing to do with this resolution whatsoever. And I realize some of you are very impassioned about this, and that's fine. I'm not even raising the question about staff and compensatory time sitting here doing this, but that's Jim knows what I'm talking about. The question I have about the resolution, though, has anyone received any comment from the Chamber of Commerce on the minimum wage issue? Usually someone from the chamber arrives and speaks or, talks to us about it. But is it because there's an assembly version and a Senate version already being considered in Albany? Has someone, Jim, you're, or Martha, you're the representative to the chamber. Jim, I think you're the author.
No, I have.
Have you heard anything?
No, I have not. I spoke to G. McPheeters at this breakfast I talked to you about, and it was not mentioned.
Not mentioned. I just want to also observe that it wasn't too many days back that the Ithaca Journal ran Ilya Casper's economic report on the first quarter of the year, and the county is not as robust as it has been, although our sales tax is up, as Joe told us about yesterday. But we're not as robust as we have been, and I think that ought to be taken into consideration as well as we're discussing this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Frank. I heartily second your comments about people staying through each other's
and
reports.
And we have an executive session, too, I think.
I know. All right. We have the amendment is to change the second resolve to 1039 by April 1st, 2013. And that's what's before us. I hope we can vote on that. All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chock?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
No.
Ms. Magasy?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
9 ayes, 6 no.
Thank you.
Okay, so that is now the amendment, the resolution in front of us.
Can you repeat it, Mark, please?
It is resolution I as amend as passed by budget, with the only the change being that the second resolve says that we strongly urge the New York State minimum wage be increased to $10.39 an hour by April 1st, 2013. Jim.
I would move the April 1st date to July 1, 2014. The same number, or to January 1, I'm sorry.
January 1.
Of 2014, as opposed to April 1st, 2013.
Okay, is there a second for that? Mike seconds that. Dooley?
We would need a new calculation of what the number would be if we wanted to keep up with inflation, which was the reason for using that number.
Well, let me just say the Senate bill has 925 at 2014.
I know.
So, you know, we basically are at 2.3%, if you want to.
The rationale was based on inflation over 40 years, and it will be 41 years.
Okay, I'm pretty sure the arguments are transferable. So we're ready to vote on this amendment to leave it to 10:39 an hour, but change the date to January 1st, 2014, right?
Right.
All in favor of that, please raise your hand. Changing the date. Four. Peter, I really can't. You got to raise your hand, Peter. Four in favor. Opposed? Eleven opposed. Okay. I'm not going to be able to find you over there. Okay. All right. So we're back to 10:39, April 1st, 2013. Can we vote on the resolution? Roll call.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chock?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
10 ayes, 5 noes.
The motion is passed.
Thank you all.
I'd like to call a 10-minute, and I mean 10-minute break. That means I would like you to be in your seats, please, at 28 after 8. Thank you.